SoftBank's Behemoth Venture Capital Fund remade the tech industry. Are we ready for the sequel? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Molly Wood. The Japanese conglomerate SoftBank shook the tech and investment landscape over the past 2 years with its $100 billion Vision Fund. This week, SoftBank announced Vision Fund 2, which aims to raise $108 billion. Okay, now previously, a good-sized venture fund was less than a quarter of that amount, maybe $200 million tops. This fund could have a huge impact on the direction of future technology. It's focused on artificial intelligence and data analysis. And of course, it's making huge waves in venture capital all over again. Paul Kodrosky is an investor with SK Ventures. I asked him how big the SoftBank effect has been.
It was massive because of the effect of having this giant sort of point mass of capital, you know, sort of a Death Star of capital out there that could, in a sense, take companies who were primed to go public. Let's use Uber as an example, and inject enough capital into them that you could absorb the kinds of losses that a company like Uber was generating pre-IPO and continues to generate post-IPO for what it's worth. So what this allowed companies to do was they were already priced, in a sense, as public companies, despite being private, hadn't learned capital discipline yet, so continued to generate huge losses. Come public, the stock doesn't do much, and now, as we've seen in the most recent headlines from Uber, are doing some fairly sizable layoffs.
Well, and Uber is probably the best known example, but you have to assume that if the minimum investment amount from a SoftBank fund was $100 million, that this fund may have also and may continue to be propping up some other businesses that might otherwise fail fast.
Oh, absolutely. But the problem you run into is you become motivated by check size, which is a weird way to do venture capital. And specifically, that means I don't say, is this a great business? I say, is this a business to which I can write a check large enough for me that I can move the needle and allocate my money fast? Because you have to think, I can't write checks $3 million or $2 million at a time if I'm running a $100 billion fund. I'm just going to end up with way too many portfolio companies. So in a weird way, you need companies that need a lot of money, and then I can just happily sort of, you know, push them along down the road, and they end up being these sort of perpetually money-losing companies that never actually go very far, in part because SoftBank kind of needs them that way.
Wow. It's like the Brewster's Millions approach to venture capital.
Yeah, that's right.
But you start to wonder what happens to the landscape when a smaller company might not get funded sort of purely because of this distorting effect.
So on that, I'm kind of somewhat optimistic. It leaves an awful lot of ground open for relatively smaller funds that are running, you know, say less than $100 million, because the companies that they're likely interested in are just completely untouchable to funds at this size. Now, whether these funds can make any money doing that sort of thing is a completely different question, but at least you're not competing with SoftBank doing that. The people who are in the most trouble are the people who are raising these so-called mezzanine funds. You know, Kleiner Perkins recently hived off a group that's now doing sort of later stage venture, and those are the people that are up against SoftBank.
When you think about the impact this has on the companies that are going to be part of our daily lives, the idea they could exist regardless of whether they ever make money, it's a little dark.
It is a little dark. Silver lining in all of this is to look back at the amount of money that was squandered and blown up in the late 90s on things like dark fiber and stringing fiber optic cable all around the planet. That was all done without regard for economic return. And now we're huge beneficiaries of that, because it turns out that lighting all that fiber has been able to drive down the cost of, you know, you being able to stream video, Netflix and other services. But you could make that argument that maybe something similar is happening today. It doesn't sort of mitigate the problem that a bunch of people are going to lose a lot of money on the way.
What do we know about where the money's coming from?
It's highly entertaining. That's mostly what we know. So it's a really funny structure, and not necessarily funny ha-ha. It's funny in the sense that something like a third, and obviously SoftBank can sort of change this on the fly and make everything I say here wrong, but roughly it looks like about a third of the fund is coming from SoftBank itself, which as a starting point is pretty unorthodox. So, you know, you imagine you know, a typical venture fund of $300 million, let's say, that then told you that $90 million, pushing a third of that money, was they were coming from themselves, you'd say, well, that's interesting. You must be, you know, really committed to your own strategy. You must really like the kinds of things you're doing because you're investing your own money in it. Well, yeah, but in this case, this 30% is coming from sort of a mix of previous portfolio firms listing that may list publicly and may generate money and may in turn have some of those proceeds put back into the new fund. So it's kind of a lot of provisos and, you know, what ifs and wherefores attached to this one third. It's not as if the partners in SoftBank Vision Fund itself are putting the money right back in.
Okay, you're right. That's funny, weird. And then beyond that, we kind of just don't know very much about it, right? We know that Microsoft is involved in some way. Some of the previous partners like Apple and Foxconn are involved in some way, but we don't know much more than
that. No, we don't know to what scale. So, you know, I'm just doing the math here. Take $100 billion, subtract $30 billion, you got yourself $70 billion left, right? This is me doing the numbers. So you got Microsoft.
This is your whole job, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm all over this. So we got Microsoft, and we got some large Japanese banks, and some other investors like Apple and Hanhai, which is, you know, Foxconn, an Apple assembler essentially, who've all made sort of memoranda of understanding, saying that they will commit to this fund. We have no idea to what size or scale, and we've even got perhaps more sort of interesting / troubling is some of the largest investors in the prior fund, which were sort of Middle Eastern sovereign wealth funds, haven't made any commitment to the new fund. And instead we have, as I recall, I think it's Kazakhstan's sovereign wealth fund that's making a small commitment. So it's really the nature of the investors. What we don't know isn't very specific. So we don't know what Microsoft's and Apple's commitment is. And what we do know is that some of the sovereign wealth funds have disappeared and new smaller ones have popped up instead, who will likely only be able to make very small investments. So this is a very, very squishy number is where you end up.
I feel like you may be saying that this fund is not a done deal. That if there's a bunch of proviso, right? Like, should we counting on this money?
Yeah, I would agree with me on that. So I would say this is closer to a marketing document than a funding document, by which I mean they're saying, here's what we'd like to do. I hope we can get a lot of people really excited about it. We don't have all the money raised. Hey, are you interested in putting up some money? And by the way, we need a lot because we'd like it to get to $100 billion. So, you know, in that sense, this is much more about marketing than anything else.
So then, speaking of math, what is the arithmetic of a fund this size? I mean, is there any possibility that they ever make a return that's bigger than the investments?
It's entirely dependent on the public markets. This is the issue. So to do the math, let's say it's a $100 billion fund. They're going to have to return a reasonable number to their investors. Let's say in excess of 18 to 20%, which is roughly what they should be hoping for in terms of an annualized return to be competitive with public markets. And there's a thing called an illiquidity premium and all this kind of stuff. They're going to have to generate roughly 4x the initial capital. So they call that $400 billion. And the way the venture industry works is that most of your returns come from, say, less than, I don't know, 20% of the companies in your portfolio. So in this particular case, you know, say 20 billion of what they've allocated, or a relatively, you know, a much smaller number of companies. So that means you're going to have to see a series of Uber-sized IPOs out there that generate a huge amount of proceeds for SoftBank, or the math never works to generate a reasonable return to come up with this $400 billion of returns that you need to provide investors with a market competitive return on a fund this size. Now, that may turn out to not matter to people because there's some really perverse phenomena in the sovereign wealth fund business. They just want to write large checks. They have the similar problem. So Kazakhstan, let's take an example, sovereign wealth fund. They have they have their own fund, and they have a target allocation, it's called, to alternative investments, which includes venture capital. And so if someone's willing to let them write a large check, that solves a huge problem for them because they got a lot of money to invest. The problem that they might not actually generate returns turns out to be secondary to the problem of being able to write large checks. Like, this is a funky, funky business out there.
Paul Kudrowski is an investor with SK Ventures. And now for some related links. So you heard Paul Kudrowski say there that SoftBank will invest some of its own money and proceeds from the Vision Fund into this second big venture fund. Well, some of that money could come from the Sprint and T-Mobile merger because, fun fact, SoftBank Group The parent company of all of this owns Sprint. The Nikkei Asian Review has a good story about how the merger, once it gets final sign-off, will take a big albatross off of SoftBank's neck. SoftBank Group bought Sprint in 2013 for $20 billion, always planning to merge it with T-Mobile. But obviously that's been a long road, and Sprint has been losing money all along. If that merger does finally happen, the paper says it'll free up a bunch of money. In fact, the Wall Street Journal says it's about $40 billion, which is exactly the amount that SoftBank has said it will invest in Vision Fund 2. A site called marketrealist.com has an interesting profile on Masayoshi Son, the founder of SoftBank and the guy who personally makes a lot of these investment decisions. Apparently, he has created a 300-year business plan. And yeah, he's definitely playing the long game. According to this article, Masayoshi Son and SoftBank lost $70 billion in the dot-com bust of the early 2000s, which is apparently just play money at this stage in the game. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.